Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Back to Barton and Bud. I'm Barton Simmons along with Bud Elliott. It's rankings day at 24/7 Sports. Go to the message boards if you just want to see people blasting me, taking shots at my family, at my upbringing, at my morals. It's all fair game on rankings day. No, I haven't been that bad, and it's going to be a kind of a weird year from a recruiting rankings perspective. Hadn't had camps really all year. Not a lot of in-person opportunities with the quarantine and the lockdown. So, feel good about the product, all things considered. Bud, this was your first kind of full cycle here. This is going to be we still have one more. I don't know. We can talk about that, I guess. We could have multiple more updates with this crop. How's been your life on the rankings calls for you?
You know, it's really been an interesting experience. I knew somehow it worked before I got here because, you know, you and I had talked, but I don't know if people on the outside really realize, you know, just how much film everybody's watching, you know, just how much info they're trying to dig up. And we really care about accurate height and weight. We care about having measurables and verified times. We care about, you know, understanding why we missed on guys in the past and then trying to apply those lessons to our current evaluation process. To not prevent misses, we're going to have misses, but to minimize the chance of misses, to get better each and every year. And, you know, like we talk about stuff. Hey, we saw this pattern three or four cycles ago. This is why we missed on these kids. This is a red flag for this kid that we identified with these previous guys who for all the world looked awesome, but this is something that is probably a bit of a red flag, and we shouldn't go overboard with this kid's ranking. At the same time, not falling victim to small sample set. Just because one kid had this issue and busted doesn't mean other kids have had the issue and been totally fine. So that's been really interesting to me, understanding, you know, how players are projected and not falling in love with guys just because they're really good high school players right now. We're not ranking the best high school players. We're ranking the best prospects for the future.
Yeah. And you know, obviously this is going to be, it's kind of going to be a fun year to figure out how exactly this should all work, because this is our second to last update for the 2021 class, for the senior class. We will have another update in January. Usually that update is coming after the All-American Bowls and the All-Star Games. And that's sort of like a final round where we really lock in our five stars, have one last look at these guys to determine, you know, who we want to bet on. We don't really have those All-American games. And in some cases, we don't even have senior seasons. And in not all cases, some guys aren't going to play senior years at all. But in many cases, we're going to have an opportunity to see them play in the spring. We're going to have for the first time ever, we're going to have adjustments in our top 247 into April and May, because we'll have new information to evaluate. And hopefully those seasons get played. With the spiking numbers right now, who knows if they'll even get played. But when do we lock in our 32 five stars, which is our number every year to reflect the first round of the NFL draft? Probably doesn't come before February. You know, what there's just a lot of variables this cycle, given how little information we have and given sort of the fluid nature of the body of work, that's going to make some conversations a lot more, again, fluid and organic.
It really will. Because we're going to have some rankings updates, at least one, like you said, in the new year, there's going to be all kinds of screams of bias, because we're going to be updating kids, and kids will be moving who have already signed. But like, we're still taking in more information. So I think the key is, do you want to get it right? Do you want to get it right as much as you can? And if so, you don't worry about what people will say. You take all possible information that you can. And it's unfair not only to the kids who have played in the fall, but to the kids who are playing in the spring, if you don't factor in what they do in the spring at the high school level. I mean, I want to get this right. If in 3 or 4 years come the NFL draft, if we're sitting here and we still have the number one recruiting rankings, I want to look back and say, you know what? Yeah, we did, because we did it right. We took into account that new information that we got, and we factored it into to our rankings. This has already been tough enough. And we still have schools asking us, any of your guys ever seen this kid in person? None of our staff's ever seen him in person. Any idea why he's not getting offered? I'm like, yeah, he's 5'9". They're combing these all-state lists, and they see this 6'1" backer. I'm like, no, he's 5'9".
It's kind of weird to talk.
It's weird
to talk to coaches right now, who might be tempted to offer an in-state player at a major in-state program, and they don't know what he looks like. They don't know how big he is, and it's like, that's typically they would have seen him probably in person 3 different times, whether it's on their campus multiple times for junior days or for games where they measure and weigh them in. This cycle, it's just like they're just guessing, just like all of us. So it's a challenge, but we'll do our best with it.
Dude, that transfer portal rule where kids can transfer immediately could not have come at a better time for these kids and for these schools, to be frank. I mean, some of these schools are going to be wishing that they had not taken some of these kids, not because they're bad kids, but just because they missed on their evals. I think everybody from schools to kids to evaluators are less accurate this year because of the lack of information. I mean, you're applying the same process. You're probably applying an even better process in some regards as far as your cross checks and whatnot. But the lack of information and the lack of evaluation periods is problematic.
Yeah. All right. Well, so we get into the games this weekend.
Preview time. Let's do it, man. We actually have some good games this weekend. Last weekend, it's not like we didn't have good games, but we didn't have
great games.
Quite the marquee games. Yeah.
It was not a great weekend last weekend. Still had a couple fun ones, but not just the matchups weren't there.
So where do you want to start in this? Because I actually have kind of a sneaky pair of games that I want to go to that are a little bit off the radar before we get to our Indiana, Ohio States, our Wisconsin Northwesterns, and of course, Bedlam. But we just got done talking about the South Carolina job. I had a really good time having a very reasoned discussion with folks on the Big Spur message board. Big Spur is the 24/7 Sports South Carolina site. Be sure to check them out for all of your Hugh Freeze and Billy Napier and Jamie Chadwell news. Two of those guys have major games this weekend. They're both their schools. Jamie Chadwell at Coastal is playing App. Coastal's is a small favorite. Liberty is a dog at NC State. Hugh Freeze's Liberty team. If you're a Gamecock fan, those are kind of your two games of the week. You want to see how those guys do. They're certainly, I think, legitimate candidates for that job. And I think both these teams can win, especially because Thomas, the quarterback for App State, he might be out.
Oh, really?
He took a pretty pretty serious injury at the end of last game. I didn't totally realize that either, and I actually bet App State on Sunday, and that thing has since moved away from me, and I dug in as to why, because normally I get pretty good line movement and value on the stuff that I hit early, and yeah, now that's what is that game? I think it's at 5.5. Yeah, I mean that could hit a touchdown, especially if Thomas doesn't play for App State, but we know South Carolina fans will be watching intently. What Coastal does, because that's such a fun offense. That kind of, I don't want to call it triple from the gun, but it has some of those elements, right?
Yeah, it doesn't. I think that's going to be an interesting one. I think the theory of is Chadwell here to stay, or is he a first year? Is he kind of a one hit wonder? That's the question if you're evaluating him for a South Carolina job. But if you go and you be someone like App State, who is sort of the opposite of a one hit wonder and has such a really established culture in a program, that's going to help your case for sure. I think the NC State one, because like NC State is a quality ACC opponent. I mean, Virginia Tech was as well, so they already have one at Liberty. But NC State is another quality opponent that's having a quality year. And yet I absolutely believe that this is a game that Liberty could win. And I think it's almost because when Devin Leary got injured, right? Like we felt like that was going to really limit NC State's ability to get the thing rolling, keep it rolling. But they've had pretty respectable show. I mean, they handled Florida State really well. They really kind of should have beaten Miami. And so they come into this game at 5-3, a strong ACC resume. And no one's really talking about the fact they're playing their backup quarterback anymore. And this is an NC State team that has, teams have run the football on them and they've given up some points. And if Liberty gets this thing up and down the field, then they got it right where they want it in terms of the style of play and the opportunity to get a win out of it. So this could be a monumental opportunity for Liberty to cash in.
If I told you that Liberty had a chance to finish with more ACC wins than Florida State, in what year would have that made sense?
That's wild, man. I hadn't thought about that, but that's It seems pretty reasonable at this point.
I mean, Chubba Purdy's out now too. They had to go in and redo the collarbone surgery there. So they're down to Jordan Travis, who gets hurt every game. It seemed, well, at least the last five games. And Tate Rodemaker, who we saw in the All-American Bowl, about 11 months ago. So, man, this is going to be interesting down the stretch with Liberty. I feel like the national media has pretty much embraced Hugh Freeze's candidacy there. I haven't seen anything from South Carolina side that they have embraced him as a candidate, but I haven't seen anybody over there, really writing it off either. And if he beats NC State, that's a pretty good statement. We know the guy can coach offense. Can he run a program? I think some elements of the program, absolutely. Some elements, maybe he will have learned something from. But they said they're not losing games 17-10 anymore, which I think is really dumb to say that and give up your leverage, in negotiations, because they'll know you're not hiring a defensive coach. But Hugh Freeze does not lose games 17-10.
Yeah, and I'd be surprised, I think, if he got South Carolina, but in a way that's all right, because all this has done is the buzz around his name and the sort of natural fit associated with that job and the opportunity has almost cleared him. Like, it's made it okay, maybe we're not ready to hire Hugh Freeze yet, but the fact that he is being talked about as a mainstream candidate without any hesitation anymore, I think goes a long way towards making him a favorite, a front runner, of a totally valid candidate for the next job that opens. And that may even be this year, or maybe it's next year. But I think that this is playing out perfectly for the future of Hugh Freeze.
It's that kind of normalization process,
right?
That, we're talking about it. His name is in the cycle. And, our old friend Charles Power was tweeting the other day about the stuff he's done with Malik Willis and how much Malik Willis, just how much better he looks under Hugh Freeze than how he apparently looked when he was at Auburn, the Liberty quarterback. This is a game between two transfer QBs who have kind of been reclamation projects. Bailey Hockman was not very good at Florida State, and he was not good last year at NC State, and he was not good so far this year except for the last two games for NC State. But Tim Beck, their new OC, has got him playing well, and I'm interested to see how that turns out.
I think Tim Beck's been one of the best hires of the offseason.
Yeah, man.
I think he's done a really good job at NC State. And that
did you see that coming?
No, I didn't. That's the thing. It's like, they're over – he's been, you know, he was at Ohio State with Urban Meyer. He was at Texas with Tom Herman. He's been sort of a guy, like he's just been the blame guy when things haven't worked out, as opposed to a guy that is coming in to sort of revitalize things. And I think with the opportunity here at NC State to come in and, yeah, it's his show, it's his operation. He's absolutely exceeded my expectations. I think he's really kind of rehabilitated his name. Not that he was in like a, you know, had a bad reputation as an offensive coordinator, but I just think this has gone a long way towards changing the narrative on him as a coach. So I think he's done an awesome job.
And let's be real here. NC State coming off the season that it had last year was not in position to attract a hotshot coordinator. So it was probably going to have to go to a guy with very little experience or a retread, if you will. And it appears to have hit on one. I mean, that he had Devin Leary looking dynamite before Leary got hurt too. So
and there's a lot of limitations with Bailey Hawkman and they've played around them and been really effective. So I'm a believer there.
All right. So here's some teams that I want to know. Do you believe in, like, I believe they're undefeated, but are you actually a believer in these two next teams that I want to talk about? We kind of have the Big Ten East and the Big Ten West championship games this weekend.
Yeah, we do.
I mean, this is going to be fun to watch. I'm going to watch some Big Ten football. All right, Indiana, they're undefeated. Their path to getting undefeated is, I feel like it's impressive and suspect at the same time. Like they were not the better team against Penn State. If you look at the post-game win expectancy, and this doesn't guarantee anything, but they had a 5% post-game win expectancy. They really kind of lucked their way into that win. They crushed Rutgers. They beat Michigan. They actually only had a 52% expectancy in that one, which, I have a hard time believing that, because I watched that game. And then they crushed Michigan State. They're doing some things that are really impressive. They're in the red zone. They've been tremendous on both sides of the ball. Like, their red zone defense has been out of this world. They're also scoring points in the red zone at a very high clip. And they've hit explosive plays on offense a ton. I mean, they hit a lot of explosive plays. Defensively, they've created a ton of turnovers. But man, I don't know. I am having a little bit of a hard time buying in on Indiana. Are you there with me? Like, do you have concerns about
this? Of course you are. Like, that's very reasonable. We're going to talk about the Big Ten West in a minute, but it's a Northwestern-ish team in a Northwestern-ish season with with the quarterback that's the former quarterback that happens to be playing at Northwestern. They're playing really good defense. They've got tremendous belief within that program. They've got a quarterback that can make some plays, who's got some athletic ability, and they got a few playmakers on the outside. It's actually that's not necessarily the Northwestern MO. I mean, Northwestern didn't make them, winning with perimeter receiving threats as much as they're just playing really good defense and winning close, which is sort of what I was getting at with the Northwestern comparison. But I don't think they're equipped to be a challenger to Ohio State, but I'm glad we're getting this Ohio State matchup, because I'm not trying not to cast doubts on Ohio State, but Nebraska's offense has not been that impressive. Penn State is 0-4. Rutgers isn't good. Like, which of those games did Penn State or did Ohio State just put a silly beatdown on these teams? Like, they won decisively. I'm not claiming they didn't, but I think in retrospect, and when you compare them to some of the other, the Alabamas, the Clemsons, do you trust Ohio State to be the juggernaut right now, given what you've seen and what you know, that we necessarily anticipated they would be before the season?
this is an interesting topic, and I'm glad you brought it up. I was talking to Josh Pate on the phone yesterday for a while about some video stuff, and he's the master of analogies. And I one kind of popped into my head here for Ohio State. Ohio State is like this championship boxer who is going just a round or two more than you feel like they should go against some of these opponents, right? Like they, some of these should be first or second round knockouts. And a couple of these have just kind of been like, man, it went four rounds, it went five rounds, it went six rounds. Sure, Ohio State still wins. It's pretty obvious. They eventually win in knockout fashion. Like they're not having to go to the cards, but these fights, like the knockouts are not coming as quickly and in as quite a dominant fashion as I think we thought they would. Part of that, I think, is Ohio State's secondary is not as good as it was last year. They lost a lot of guys to the NFL. I know they've had some injury issues there at corner. On the Bucknuts Morning 5 podcast this morning, they were talking about how, you know, corner is clearly the weakness on this team right now. And if you think about it, who Ohio State has played, have they played anybody that you really think can exploit them with a cornerback position? Because if there's one thing Indiana does good on offense, it's hit explosive plays. Like they might be able to hit some explosive plays on Ohio State. That's a potential weakness there. Now, where Ohio State can throw the knockout punch is literally on the other side of that. Indiana's defense, because it's aggressive, because they try for turnovers and they're trying to be a kind of a chaos defense, they give up a ton of explosive pass plays. A ton. They're 74th in the nation in explosive pass rate allowed. Ohio State is third in the country in passing explosiveness. If your defense is a little bit leaky through the air against Ohio State, Justin Fields is going to just flood you. Like that little drip, drip, drip becomes Noah's Ark in just a second. So they have to find a way to get Ohio State off schedule and prevent some of the explosive plays. And Ohio State may just be able to throw the knockout punch here against Indiana and make it into a game where they don't have to worry about the run and make Indiana just throw.
It's a little weird that Indiana hadn't been able to run the ball very well.
Yeah.
It seems like they would be better at that. The running backs I feel like have some ability. Stevie Scott, Samson James, like those guys seems like they have talent, but they just can't seem to get loose in the run game. And that, this is not the kind of game. I mean, I agree. Like there's some, and even like I remember when was it? I feel like it was that Urban Meyer's second to last year there when Ohio State was like not beating people as bad as they were supposed to be. And
then Iowa got them and it really and broke the dam.
Yeah. Or maybe it was a Purdue got them that year.
It might've been Purdue. Yeah.
And, I feel like Indiana was one of the early games that year, and they were played really close to them that first half because they kept on hitting a bunch of big plays. Was it Simi Cobb? Is that the guy's name? The receiver back
then?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So Indiana's done this before and played with Ohio State. I think they're gonna have to play out of their minds once again on the outside with Watt Fillier and Hendershot and Freifogel and all those guys. But they're kind of built for this, and I feel like they believe, like they're coming in here with a little bit of a streak here where they've gotten some wins on their belt and they've gained some confidence. So I don't know, man. This is an interesting matchup. What's the spread on this? I haven't even looked.
20.
I feel like
so it's pretty clear Vegas does not believe.
Right.
I was hoping to bet Ohio State. Like I told myself, if I get a 17 or if I get an 18, I'm going to fire on Ohio State.
Right.
And it opened 19 and a half and I missed it. It only lasted for a minute or two. And it got to 20 and a half. And I just, at that point, I just don't see a lot of value.
I gotta be honest, man. Like, I think I almost lean Indiana there, but maybe
it's a lot.
That's an interesting line. I'll have to dig on that a little more.
Barton, what number do you definitely take Indiana at? Like 23?
Oh yeah, I think so. Like I would the irony, I mean, it's a sliver here. But like, if that number is sitting at 17 or something, then yeah, I think I'm probably like kind of leaning Ohio State. Feels like, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20 points, like that range is a little more reasonable. But I don't know, man. Something about that 2-0 gives me a little pause.
I completely agree. It's sometimes you go into a week, you're thinking, okay, man, I really hope I get this number on this team. And this is why you bet numbers, not teams. because if you fall in love with teams, Vegas is going to adjust on them, and you're all of a sudden you're going to get, you know, like man, I see that nice number 9 next to Indiana. They're 4-0. You think you're going to get something in Vegas? Like, no, these guys aren't really a top 10 type team. We're not playing this game.
All right, hey, segue here.
All right,
where is Indiana is not the number. You know, they're maybe the number 2 team in the Big Ten East, we think, right? But where would you rank them in your Big Ten West power rankings?
Ooh. Well, I would have them behind Wisconsin.
Yeah, I agree.
Iowa's playing pretty well. I think I would probably have them second. Or third?
Okay, so you would have them above Northwestern.
I think so, yeah. Because Northwestern, like Indiana has some issues that I think are a little bit hidden right now by their record. And they also have the 2019 Florida Gators thing going on. Where remember when UF had a bunch of these super long runs, and so it inflated their yards per carry numbers, and it made it seem like they had a really good running offense when like their success rate was still really low. That's Indiana right now. Indiana has this really weird split going on. They're number 2 in rushing explosiveness, but number 74 in rushing success rate. So I think there's some kind of underlying issues. And by the way, guys, that's not sustainable. We don't see that last over the course of a full season. You are not going to continue to pop that many huge runs if your run game sucks on a down-to-down basis. It's just not how it works. So that's going to regress some, most likely. But still, Northwestern, man, have you already seen this stat? How many yards has Northwestern had in its last 3 games?
I don't know. Not a lot. How many?
I think it's like 902.
In this last 3?
Yeah. Let me pull it up here. I wrote about it in the Every Game Reviewed feature this week. Yeah, okay. Northwestern's yardage totals last 3 games. 273. 317, 292.
Yeah.
They're number 99 in the country right now in Connolly's SP Plus offensive rating. And that includes the beatdown against Maryland.
122nd in the country in marginal explosiveness. That's just like, I mean, this is, I got to be honest with you. In a way, this is a little bit, because I was very high on Northwestern coming into the season. And felt like they would have a chance to win the Big Ten West. So I'm looking good on that prediction. Like they are kind of what I thought they were from a record standpoint, from a just in terms of their ceiling, their floor, like they're going to be a 5-3 team at worst kind of, but their offense, I was hoping for more of a step forward from their offense. And it really is just right now, it's just not beating them, you know, which is a step forward, but it's certainly not a net positive. Like it's just they're just breaking even there on offense. And last year it was a negative. This year they're breaking even. Granted they're taking care of the football. They're not shooting themselves in the foot, but it's still, I just think it's hard to win football games when you just got to grind out drives like that. They just can't ever seem to have explosive athletes on the outside.
And to me, there's a difference between the way I'm thinking about these two teams. I think you like Wisconsin better than I do overall. I'm not really sold on Wisconsin's receivers, and I'm not really sold on their backs. I'm fairly sold on Graham Mertz. And I think the offensive line at Wisconsin is probably fine, but this run game has not been super dominant yet. But the thing is, the reason why I'm all in on Wisconsin here, I bet him at 6.5. I bet him again at 7, you know, personal stuff. And now that's up to 7.5 is because Wisconsin's defense, I don't have any questions about. That's a really good unit. I know they've played 2 pretty sketchy offenses so far in Illinois and Michigan, but those 2 offenses are at least as good as what Northwestern has. And Minnesota just totally dominated them. Illinois did not score an offensive touchdown. Michigan had 11 points. I just think that people say, like, why would you bet Wisconsin here? Like, Northwestern's defense is really good. And it is. We'll talk about that in a second. I think the shutout is in play here. for Wisconsin. I mean, they have a lot of film on this Northwestern offense now, and this is a lot better defense than the Wildcats have faced in recent weeks.
So, right. But this, you're getting sucked, and I'm not saying I disagree with you.
I may be getting sucked in.
No, but like, this is a classic Northwestern trap. Is you can't envision how the points are going to come, but when they get in years like this, you know, so like 2017, they beat Wisconsin as a 15-point dog. I'm sorry, no, they just covered as a 15-point dog, but they. You know, like they win against Michigan State in triple overtime. They beat Nebraska in overtime. They just figure out ways to like get points, whether that's block punts, whether that's like a short field somehow, whether that's it's just a. And again, I'm not even. I might bet them. I might bet Wisconsin too. But that's the weird thing about these games. When Northwestern is having the good seasons, they just sort of find ways to just hang around. Like, oh, you'd be looking up and it's the fourth quarter or late in the third. And Northwestern hadn't mounted a drive more than like 35 yards all game, but the score is 16-9. And it's just like, holy cow. Like if they get one big play, like this game's tied. So it's a weird experience following a good Northwestern team, because they're good in a very like hard to fathom sort of way.
They just don't make a lot of mistakes. They make you earn it against them, and we'll see if Wisconsin is good enough to consistently earn it against this defense. Michigan's defense does not make you earn it all the time, and Illinois' defense they played hard, but they have some new faces over there. They certainly gave up a couple freebies.
What's the total
in that game? 42.5.
Man, I'm like a little tempted to play the under on that one. That's a low number.
I was thinking
what, like
23-13 Wisconsin.
Okay.
That's 36.
Uh-huh. If
it's almost a touchdown of value if you feel good about that score.
Yeah. Feel pretty good about no one getting in the 30s. Can you get two of them in the 20s? Possibly, but I think that'd be a good day for Northwestern if that happens.
That'd be a great day considering what Northwestern just did against, I mean, Nebraska 21 points, Purdue 27 in a kind of a rainstorm sloppy thing, and you know, Iowa 21. They are running with more pace though. I will say that, like, that does scare me a little bit, because they, you know, they're number 19 in the country in plays per drive. So even though they're not being efficient in any way and they're not being explosive at all, they are getting off a lot of plays, and that does increase your scoring chances a little bit.
Yeah. It's a very weird, like it's a weird experience, because that's the way Bajakian's been doing it at Boston College too. Like which is very much the same kind of, oh, we're tight ends and offensive line and we're going to run the rock. But you look up and it's like, well, wait a minute. Like BC's been, you know, one of the fastest playing teams in the country. And so they're kind of doing it the same way this week. I'll be interested to see what that kind of offensive game plan looks like and how they try to protect things, because you're right. Like they actually want to get a lot of plays off.
The Wildcats just have to find somebody who can give them some kind of explosive play. Like we're just not seeing, I mean, any of it. And you know, I know they run the ball so much. They've only thrown the ball 111 times this year. They've ran it. I mean, Their run pass ratio is, they're running 70% of the time on standard downs. You know, that this could actually be a nice shot at a first half under if you want to go that route, because almost nobody runs the ball on Northwestern on first down or second down. Like they're one of the least ran against teams. They're kind of daring you to pass. Wisconsin is one of those teams that it's kind of like, you know what? We'll go ahead and just see how good you are against the run. Like let's go ahead and test this stuff out. That could lead to a little first half under action before one of these teams need to open it up and throw the ball around. Looking for that first half.
It's going to be a fun game. This might be my favorite game of the weekend, honestly, because it's just figuring out how both teams try to find points, find yards. Because Paul Chris is one of the best in the country at, like, you look up and you're not really sure who all his playmakers are, but you know, somehow they got a jet sweep and a tight end pop pass, and like, you know, they've scored 30 points before you know it, and you don't even really understand how they did it. So I'm excited about this one.
I like that. By the way, speaking of tempo teams, Kent State last night, I wrote about this today on 24/7. If you're in a live betting situation, I know, you know, Fornelli usually has the tips for you guys on the Cover 3 pod, all these different rules and whatnot. But one for him, if the first couple drives of a team that is favored by like mid-20s, you know, 28-ish, if they don't go so well, especially if the opponent is scoring on basically luck-based plays like Akron was last night, a muff punt, you know, a 59-yard run that's not really repeatable given what we know about Akron. The thing is, the original game line is accounting for garbage time. It's accounting for, like, you know, those Alabama lines when they're favored by 45. If they left their starters in the whole time, the line would be higher. It'd probably be about a touchdown higher. The thing is, if you're – so Kent State Akron was 21 all with 40 minutes left in the game. I took a look at this. So I'm going to live bet the hell out of this on Kent State's side, because Kent State so far has moved the ball at like 11 or 12 yards per play. Akron is not going to continue to do this based on everything I've seen and watched them so far. And the thing is, Kent State is not going to be able to pull its starters. So I'm going to get Kent State's starter scoring output for the whole rest of the game. Just a little thing to watch. If you're watching the first quarter of one of these games.
What numbers you get it at? Do you remember on the live line?
16.5 and 23.5. And the original line was 26. Yeah. So I was like, all right. Yeah, pretty sure here that, and they won by 34.
Yeah, that was, I had Kent State on the opening line. That was a fun one to just sit back and let the waterfall come. Because Buffalo teased me. I missed on Buffalo pick earlier, but Kent State took care of business.
Were you worried about Kent State? Like when Akron was 21 all, or just,
I really, okay, this is, I really dish. Wasn't, because it was so early in the game. And there was, and Kent State was just like, every time they got the ball, it was like 10 yards, 15 yards, chunk, chunk, chunk. Like, it's like, man, this is, we got plenty of time to work with this thing.
I turned it off after Kent State went for two to try to go up by like 24 points. Okay, yeah, this is, they're going to pour it on tonight in a rivalry game. So I woke up, it's like 34 points. There you go.
Kent State's fun. Perfect. That's a Dino Babers guy. What's Sean Lewis, his name?
John Lewis.
Yeah, he was at Eastern Illinois. He was at Syracuse. He's doing some Dino Babers stuff there. And it'll be interesting. I mean, he's young, 36 or something. Be curious what his next step is whenever that comes.
At my prior stop, we did a coaches fight club tournament draft in the offseason, just one of those boring days in May. And I had Sean Lewis as a second round pick, and I was like, this is tremendous value. Like, have you guys ever seen Sean Lewis? I mean, he looks like he's playing tight end in the NFL on Sundays. And yeah, if you guys haven't seen Sean Lewis, you haven't watched much Kent State, I don't blame you, but they're fun. And he's
where did he play in college? He played tight end in college somewhere, right? It's like Ohio State or something. Like, I can't remember where he played, but he played somewhere.
He played tight end at Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, there it is. I knew it was a Big Ten school.
Yeah, those aren't those soft tight ends either. Those are blocking, you know.
Yeah, he was a glorified offensive tackle there.
Yeah, I don't have a height on him, but Sean Lewis.
Hell, he's 36, so he better be able to take care of some business in a coach's fight club. Find him much 50 pluses.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's younger than us, so if you look at the photos of him next to recruits too, he's not six. Oh, his old recruiting profile at Wisconsin said he was 6'7".
Oh man, I didn't realize he was that big.
Apparently, he's pretty damn big.
Oh, let's go.
So yeah, Sean Lewis is he's not playing around. And if we redid that draft, I think he'd be higher up for sure. Fickell, by the way, another G5 coach who I think could probably rumble.
Yeah. Yeah. He's kind of like, he's sort of like a weirdo that you just, you know, he get crazy eyes and you're not really sure what he's willing to do to win a fight. I could see that for sure.
If the listeners can't tell, we are totally off script, but that's okay. we do need to go to ad break, pay some bills. When we get back, we're going to hit Bedlam. We're going to hit some anxiety bowls, and then we're going to open up the 5-star mailbag. So during this ad break, pull up your app, especially if you got Apple, 5 stars. Drop a question for the mailbag in there. Say some nice things. And we have an inspirational story, too, when we get back. So we'll go ahead and read that. See you guys in a second.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean, outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
All right, welcome back. Now it's time for Bedlam. Oklahoma State. Is this going to be a potential rematch in the Big 12 championship game, depending on how it goes down? Break me through the math here. Have you done it, bud?
So there are some unfavorable tiebreakers for Oklahoma because Iowa State, you know, beat Oklahoma. Kansas State beat Oklahoma. But I think there is a decent chance for a rematch.
If Oklahoma here. Wins, basically?
Yeah. Yeah, if Oklahoma loses, I'm pretty sure they can't make it. But Barton, you know what they say. Anything can happen in Bedlam. Oklahoma can win by a little bit. Oklahoma can win by a medium amount. Oklahoma can win by a bunch. This is one of the least competitive rivalries in the sport. I think that Oklahoma State has two wins in the last 17 years, but it doesn't feel like that. You know what I mean? Like I feel like it's always hyped up to be something. There's even when the Sooners eventually pull away to win by two touchdowns, we at least get some crazy moments. Remember the Mayfield game with those crazy interceptions in the fourth quarter, and then whoever was playing QB for the Cowboys, you know, came right back and threw another pick. And even though I kind of know who's going to win every year, I still like this game. It's still fun to me.
Yeah, I feel like I know who's going to win this year too. Do you?
Yeah, and I'm sorry to do this to you. I'm just not seeing the improvement from Spencer Sanders and from this offensive line that I need to see. You know, the run game success rate is not where it needs to be. Sanders is fine with the underneath stuff and they protect him really well with all these screens and creative stuff from Gundy, but he's coaching around a lot of stuff. I think he's coaching around an offensive line that doesn't block very well for Chuba Hubbard. Got Chuba Purdy on the brain today. And they're not able to push the ball down the field. Like their runs are usually stopped and they don't hit any big pass plays. It's just not a great recipe here. I mean, they're basically, hey, can Spencer or Hubbard break off a big run? That's kind of the offense.
I think Oklahoma is starting to hit their stride. You know, Lincoln Riley has to get a couple losses out of the way early in the season. I think at this point in the year, Oklahoma's starting to get his groove. And I mean, they scored 62 points in each of the last two games. So maybe that's an obvious point to make, but I do think when you look at Ramondre Stevenson getting back at the running back position, a guy that was suspended most of the year, you know, Ronnie Perkins coming back on the defensive line, Jaden Hazelwood, who I don't know if he's even had a catch yet, but he's getting healthy and he's able to play. The defense has settled down a little bit over the last couple of weeks. I early in the year, it was like, we're looking at Oklahoma, but are we really looking at a Lincoln Riley Oklahoma team? There's so many new pieces, so many faces that are out, so many suspensions, so many opt-outs, transfers, new quarterback. Like how do you call this a fully realized Oklahoma team yet? And if I were to pick Oklahoma, Oklahoma State back then, week three, week four, week two, I'm probably picking Oklahoma State, even in retrospectively, I probably am. But right now, I just think Oklahoma is a different team. And I think Oklahoma State is the same team. And I don't, like you said, I don't know that we've seen enough improvement and evolution out of the offense to give me confidence that they can keep up with what I think Oklahoma is capable of doing right now.
I hit the mute button so I could Google the phrase, "I should have killed you when I had the chance." And I was trying to remember what movie that comes from, but apparently it's been used in so many movies that there's actually supercuts of all the different movies that it's been in. And I feel like that's the rest of the Big 12 to Oklahoma. We said this in the first couple weeks of the season. You need to get Oklahoma now. Like, if not now, when are you going to bury the Sooners? When are they not going to win the Big 12 if not for this year? And yet here we are, man. Next week's Thanksgiving, and they're a 7-point favorite against Oklahoma State.
And if you're Iowa State, or if you're Texas, or if you're one of these programs that thinks they got a shot at getting it, even does Kansas State with three losses? They only got three losses, right?
I think mathematically Kansas State has a chance because they only have two Big 12 losses. Because remember, one of their losses was the Arkansas State debacle opening weekend.
So they've lost. So anyway, point being, like, there's a lot of teams in the Big 12 that should be rooting for Oklahoma State today. I don't know how the tiebreakers work. Maybe there's somebody that's ruled out if Oklahoma State makes it in. But you don't want to get Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship game. You'd rather have Oklahoma State in the Big 12 championship game. I'm just telling you. It's in your best interest, Texas, Iowa State, whoever else is got a rooting interest in this game. That's you don't want to get Oklahoma in that game.
Yeah, the rest of the Big 12, you're exactly right. The one thing I do think Oklahoma State has this year, and I bet Oklahoma State in this game, and it's not because I like the Cowboys. I know you're probably pretty surprised because I've not been on
What's
them
the
much this year. I grabbed it at 10 when it came out on Sunday. Now it's like what? I'm still looking at the first half lines. So first half lines are 4. So waiting for this to low, but it's probably like 7, 7.5.
Wow, so it's gone down. That's interesting.
Yeah, so it's 7. It's actually leaning a little bit Oklahoma State. Like there's a chance this goes to 6.5. I think 7, 7.5 is an appropriate line here. I still don't have a ton of reason to trust Oklahoma's defense. I think it's improved during the year, but improved does not necessarily equal good. And I can't totally discount the fact that Mike Gundy, could scheme some stuff up for this game and put a lot of points on the Sooners. And look, Oklahoma State's defense is legitimately good. They should have beaten Texas. Now, they did not deserve to beat Kansas State. They were pretty fortunate there in that one. But, like, this is a good team. It's just – they're not good in the way that Oklahoma State is normally good. They have the 8th best defense in the country per SP Plus and the 45th best offense. I don't think I'd ever thought I'd live to see the day where a Mike Gundy team had that.
And Oklahoma now, with Oklahoma State coming and West Virginia coming the week after that, probably has the 2 best defenses in the Big 12 ahead of it, right?
They go to West Virginia.
Right.
Yeah. The 2 best defenses. You're right.
So I mean that's so if you're looking for like an avenue, a path to victory, for Oklahoma State, get Spencer Rattler back on that turnover bug, because he's opened the door early in the year, and that's really what bit him. Hell, he was benched at one point. So if Oklahoma State can generate some turnovers, I really think that's the only avenue to get this W.
I agree with that. Anxiety bowls?
Anxiety bowls. Who you got?
I might have missed some here, but like these are two that just when I was scrolling down the schedule last night putting this together. With anxiety bowls, I try to think about a game in which whichever team loses. And Barton with his curtain right now is creating a solar eclipse effect on the screen, which is check this out. It's awesome.
Oh, look at that.
No, there you go. Like let's leave it for the YouTube crowd. That's amazing. All right. VT and Pitt and Tennessee and Auburn. Which of these fan bases will be the most pissed off if they lose this game on Saturday?
VT, Pitt, Tennessee, Auburn. I think I was going to say Auburn, But I feel like VT fans are getting pretty ornery right now. I think Tech fans have had about enough of this. They were supposed to be good this year. They've had their moments, but the way Pitt's sort of stumbling into this thing, I know Kenny Pickett's back, so that should help a little bit. But Paris Ford's opted out, and they've gotten beat up a little bit over the middle part of the season. That would be a tough. I think Virginia Tech would be full on, like, all right, like, flip the switch. Hot seat is officially hot.
Do you remember last year when Fuente was trying desperately to get the Baylor job and pretending he wasn't, and then it looked like he was leaving for the Baylor job? I don't know. I'm trying to remember the exact specifics here. And then he came back, and they took that ridiculous staff photo. We're all like cheesing for it, like, "Hey, ready to roll at Virginia Tech?" Like, wait, weren't you ready to roll yesterday? Like, is this new? And some of the guys in the background are like not smiling at all, and it's just a totally awkward situation. I can't believe that they're super happy with him right now. And yet, if I look at the Hokies, I think they're the only team in the country that has lost three games in which they had a win expectancy of more than 50%.
Yeah.
That is some legitimately bad luck. And most of their wins that they don't have
some
any lucky
bad
wins.
Bad luck, but some of it's also like Liberty was kind of bad coaching.
Bad coaching. You know? No, there's no doubt. No doubt. I will say in their wins, they have dominated everybody, right? Like 100% win expectancy against NC State, 90% against Duke, 99% against Boston College, 77% at Louisville. So their wins have been decisively, dominant. And their losses, like, nobody's blown them out except for, well, they probably should have got blown out by UNC, but I think they outcoached UNC in that game for part of it. I think Auburn fans might be pretty pissed if they lose to Tennessee, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about that. That's gonna be, because Tennessee doesn't look like Tennessee is. There's issues there, obviously, and but they need this win, and I could very easily see Tennessee winning this game, but there's been enough sort of ups and downs of this season for Auburn that it just feels like they've. You know, maybe they could absorb this because Virginia Tech has all been a little bit downhill recently, which is why I said them. But the Tennessee game, like, I mean, the Tennessee fan base, what would that be? What are they now? 2-5?
2-4.
2-4.
Looks like.
So they get a 2-5. Whew. Like, that's all the, like, what do we get rid of? Like, how is this better than Butch talk is going to pick up. And this is kind of a year when, frankly, you should get Auburn. Auburn is a little bit of on a down cycle after losing all those guys on the defensive line. Not that Auburn's a bad team, but like they're probably only going to be better next year. Not and Tennessee this year is supposed to be the year that things start to turn. They're just not. So I think that's going to be a fascinating game. I also think there's a little bit of anxiety for Michigan Rutgers. Rutgers, they're playing with house money. They got to win. They're playing better than people anticipated. I would imagine Michigan can win this game, but if you don't, and they may not, this is you're throwing dirt on the grave at that point. You're recovering the coffin. I mean, I don't know how you recover from that.
Do you ever tell your kids, like, hey, this is the dad only thing, don't do this?
I gotta warn that a lot, yeah.
Okay. I bet Michigan here. Like, shoot. Don't do this at home. This is for professionals only. This is purely based on numbers. 8.5 is just too low. Like, this should be higher. I'm like, okay, how do I justify this? I usually try to write a sentence after I bet something as opposed to just be like, here's what my numbers say, because that gets boring. And then people kind of come for the explanations as opposed to just the picks. Man, I'm like, okay, how do I justify this? All right, well, if they play to the quality of play that they played against Indiana 2 weeks ago, they'll cover the number against Rutgers. That's kind of the hope you're holding out for. They're going to play multiple quarterbacks in this game, it looks like, because they're having an open quarterback competition. I just don't trust Rutgers. Like Rutgers is not a good team yet. They're an exciting team. They did some interesting stuff against Ohio State's third stringers late in that game. They were the beneficiary of 7 turnovers by Michigan State and like 41 runs on first down that went nowhere and basically put the Spartans behind the chains every single time. Since then, they struggled with an Illinois COVID-stricken team, and Ohio State and Indiana just destroyed them before they pulled their starters.
Schiano does have a little bit of the old like Ohio State playbook, though. He's seen some beatdowns. He may know a couple pressure points he can push on. It's going to be interesting. I mean, as someone that made the just incredibly, incredibly stupid decision of betting Michigan last week, I think it was like a contrarian play. I think I was just like, this is too obvious. Wisconsin.
What number did you get it at? Did you wait till game time and get like a 6 or 7?
I think I betted it. I don't know. I didn't. I got like 4.5 or something like that. It wasn't like a value play day of. It was a little bit of what do we even know about Wisconsin? They've got all these COVID guys. Has Graham Mertz even practiced? They're missing a bunch of starters. Michigan's back against the wall. If someone had just shook me and been like, Harbaugh has never won as an underdog, has he even covered as a dog? Then I would have been like, yeah, you're right. Stay away at best. But I played it. And with that, I am going to sit out Michigan games the rest of the year unless I'm fading them.
So you're swearing off Michigan. I'll
play against them if I have to, but I can't bet them anymore.
But you're not looking, you're not rushing to take Rutgers with less than double digits.
I'm not rushing to take Rutgers, but what's Rutgers against the spread this year?
Got to be pretty good.
I would think so.
I mean, did they cover Ohio State?
I had to have, I would think. Yeah.
Oh, they are 100% against the spread.
Yeah, Rutgers is moral victories every week, brother. Undefeated in moral victories.
The one thing I would say, like, that would be a good justification for taking Michigan last week, even knowing the result, like from a process standpoint, if you believe that the number on like Thursday or Friday had already baked in Mertz playing, and then when the rest of the general public realized that Mertz was playing, that they drove it up to 6 or 6.5, whatever it closed at game time, then I think you could make an argument for playing Michigan based purely on numbers that, hey, like the value of Mertz is being double counted in this spread. Like the people who started the spread already knew that he was going to play. And now that the rest of the public knows, it's being driven up more without, you know, realistic justification for doing so. But even then, I mean, that was tough. That was, I didn't have either side.
My, the book I use is not very, it's tough to make live bets. I need to, now that I can go mainstream and gambling is legal in the state of Tennessee and there's more mainstream sites, I should dive, get on board there. But that would have been a smart live play to make. 2 drives in, like, hell, 1 drive in. This is not going to go the way Michigan wants it to go.
No, it's not. Okay, let's get the mailbag and then get out of here. Hope you guys have an awesome weekend. Barton. And this comment is from, I need to pull this guy's name. What's his name? His name is Black Sox. He writes, insightful and quality content. Hey guys, love the podcast. I appreciate all of the amazing content you're constantly putting out. Barton, you made a comment on the Cover 3 pod a long time ago where you basically said that the basic athletic ability of every human being is to run, which got me thinking about how lazy I was and motivated me to drop 60 pounds since 2019 and start competing in races. So thank you. Dude, that's pretty cool. Like you're inspiring people like Biggest Loser style.
Yeah, I mean, I love that he's like simplified this as if just I mentioned running and he was like, you know what? Pretty good idea. I'm gonna do that and lose 60 pounds and get in races. Like I can't imagine all the, you know, the real trials and tribulations old boy went through. Like that's impressive. I'm glad of that. Give me a little bit of that juice, man. How do I get motivated? I just need to re-listen to that podcast because that maybe brother, I'm not doing a lot of working out these days. So that's awesome. Good word.
I mean, I was lifting Liam up today onto the slide because sometimes he's scared to climb up to the big boy slide, but he likes to do the slide. So I'm getting a lot of like shoulder press in because he likes to slide down. So I just put him up there and skip the line. And it's like, dude, you're getting heavy. This is tough.
It happens. I broke my toe last night, I think, stubbing it on a coffee table, trying to take one of the kids up to bed. So I'm out here working, you know,
like wrangling them.
Yeah.
Cause they're trying not to go
exactly.
to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh dude. He continues. I want to ask you guys about the future of college football. If we look back over the past 20 years, we've seen the emergence of spread offenses, the overemphasis of the quarterback position, Clemson's rise, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What do you see being the next aspect of our sport that will revolutionize the game? Name, image, likeness seems obvious, but is there anything beyond that you could see, you know, parity or either increasing or decreasing? What schools or conferences do you see as next in line that might benefit? Are there any that might see dramatic, you know, losing ground, such as the COVID impact on the G5? Thanks again for all the great work. Y'all are awesome.
Man, there's a lot of ways to go on that one. I talked to an actual G5 coach a week or so ago, maybe this week, that feels that like it's very much an inevitability of the Power 5 breaking away from the G5. And I do think that that could change a lot. I think the teams, I mean, like right now we're in the midst of the transfer portal era, the lessening of the restrictions of transfers, the one-time transfer only situation that I think is going to inspire, provoke teams to build out personnel departments that scout, evaluate, recruit, follow the transfer market. That means not just like scouring the portal and seeing who pops up. That means looking at depth charts around the country, and doing sort of back channel investigation on who might be unhappy, who might be popping in the portal, who can we put a bug in a third party's ear about those that player potentially having an opportunity here. That's going to be absolutely a big part of it. And I think he hits it on the name and his likeness too. I mean, the way that's going to evolve, the different ways, directions that can go, the different ways athletic departments and football offices have to bulk up their pitch, you know, generate Twitter followers, generate Instagram followers for these guys, generate content that they can post on their Instagram page. That's going to be part of a central focus of recruiting moving forward. So, and we're in a kind of an interesting time where I think there's a lot of change and disruption taking place.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I want to kind of piggyback on that. You mentioned name, image, likeness and building up those facilities and those infrastructures and people in your front offices. And it got me to thinking about kind of normalization of things that just 10 years ago we wouldn't have thought about. And we have gone from seeing players sit out bowl games. And now we're seeing players sit out the rest of the year if their head coach gets fired, like we're seeing now with South Carolina, you know, those guys deciding just go prep for the draft when they realize that their season is over. And it's a trend that as a college football fan, I don't like. It's one I understand, but I don't have to like it, even if I get why they're doing it. And I wonder if we can use name, image, likeness. When you're signing those deals as players, you're going to have a little more contractual obligations that they're to go to. You're probably going to have to play certain games if you're healthy, if you're going to do these endorsement type deals. And some of those are going to be contingent on that. So on the one hand, we have the recruiting side of this, like getting players to your school. I kind of think that maybe it's been undersold a little bit by the national media, which we're a part of. So maybe we need to do a better job of it. But here we are now talking about it, of using name, image, likeness to keep guys in school and to keep them in school during the season, and maybe holding on to some of your guys, you can still sell tickets down the stretch. That doesn't necessarily tip the power balance in the sport, like I think Black Sox question is getting at, but it's a natural extension I see. I'm also worried about the G5 and the FCS level and things like that going forward. I think Jimbo has an absolutely great point on why it is important to play G5 schools. And we're seeing like some of these conferences say, we don't play G5 schools, or we don't play FCS schools, rather. Well, the thing is, one of those games makes that school's budget for this year. And then they have a pay game, you know, that the FCS school goes and plays the D2 school. And that helps their budget for the entire year. It's kind of a trickle down effect. And for our sport to survive, you know, for us to be doing the Barton and Bud show in 2040, we need people playing football at all levels, the high school level. And we need it also in the college level, not just at the Power Five, but we need people who, you know, go to high school and say, oh, I'm going to play football. I'm going to go play college ball. If that dream becomes that much harder to go play college ball to where you're not able to get, you know, as many slots as you used to be able to get at an FCS school or at a D2 school, then I think that hurts participation all the way down. Some trickle down economics is kind of BS, but this I think is real. And so I am worried. I was talking to a guy the other day and he told me that like this one FCS school might only have 5 scholarships available next year due to COVID. I mean, that's scary stuff. They normally have 63, I think it is. So that's kind of a worry I have about the sport. Just something that if you only follow the P5 teams, you don't think about this, but there is sort of a food chain effect here that we need to be concerned about, I think.
It's a bit of a tangent, but I talked to an FCS coach because, you know, all these, there's going to be scholarship overages that are going to be allowed for FBS programs because of the COVID stuff. That's actually not a luxury that even if the NCAA allows scholarship overages for FCS programs, and I imagine this is the case for some FBS programs in the Group of Five.
It definitely is.
They don't have the money to allow for additional scholarships guys to be on campus. So thanks NCAA for like letting us like provide more scholarships in this additional year, but we can't take you up on it because we don't have the finances to support 15, 20 more guys on our roster. It's the economic revolution that's taking place is pretty fascinating, pretty far reaching. And, there's going to be some unintended consequences along the way that I think are going to be really hard to identify.
The college model, assuming you don't get some kind of crazy concussion, is a really good deal for about 98% of the players out there. For about 3% of the guys out there, it's a pretty crappy deal. You know, those are the guys who, if in any other sport, they'd be drafted out of high school. You know, baseball, they would never see the insides of a college baseball stadium. They'd never play college hockey. You know, they'd be out. Tennis, they'd be, you know, winning the Grand Slam at 18. Most of the guys, though, that play college ball, this is a pretty good deal. Most of them step on campus and never have a true shot at the NFL or playing at the professional level. And, you know, they get their education paid for, books, meals, that kind of stuff. And some of them get beat up pretty bad. But for the ones who can get through it kind of healthy, it's not a bad deal at all. It's just the ones we focus on the most are the super talented ones who are going to go on to play in the NFL.
Yeah. Good question. Keep on getting into those races. Keep running. I'm impressed. You're going to have to inspire me. I'm going to have to get working out again.
Do you think if we send him a Barton Bud t-shirt, will he wear it during a race?
He better. Apparently, I'm like
merch.
His like I'm his inspiration. So yeah, hell yeah, he should. I need a Barton Bud awesome. Shirt.
Ditto. We need to talk to Meredith about that. I did at Port on Twitter for the signing day show. We need one of those.
Yeah, I didn't see a response. The elections. Did I miss it?
No, he didn't respond. I'm going to have to text him. Be like, hey, get on the Twitter. Right. Cool, buddy. We'll see you Sunday night.
Later.
Baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.